Welcome into the Fan pregame, Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590, the Fan. For the next hour, Ailish and Justin going through what's on tap tonight. We got a couple NHL games after us. We got the Kings and Pittsburgh up at 7 o'clock on Sportsnet. Boston and Calgary on Sportsnet 1 at 9 p.m. To go through a little NHL chat. We'll have Devin Dubnyk on in about 10 minutes and Kristen Shelton to wrap up the show.
Yeah, Shelton on for a very specific and maybe slightly depressing reason.
What happened?
For fans of the Toronto Maple Leafs with Anthony Stolarz having to undergo a procedure today. I don't know if it's getting funny or there's like a modicum of humor in the fact that every time Craig Berube says someone's day-to-day, they miss multiple weeks, multiple games, maybe even upwards of a month here with Anthony Stolarz. I don't know what's going on with that, but, you know, there was a lot of, like, sighing of relief once we found out more about that injury. And then, hey, surprise, there's an actual procedure done, and multiple weeks are going to be missed from Anthony Stolarz, which kind of changes the tenor of the entire Maple Leaf season. We'll see how they react to that.
Yeah, we'll have a text line open at 590-590. What's your level of concern with Anthony Stolarz being sidelined for 4 to 6 weeks with an operation to remove a loose body in his knee or a pebble? You took some kin. What kind of pebbles are floating around in the knee?
This is beyond kin. I have no idea. I have absolutely
That's
no idea.
It's kind of gross.
I mean, we've heard this a lot in sports. Like, you got, you know, some surgery
body.
Done to clean up something, right? Clean up whatever. It seems to be something that plagues goaltenders more often than not. Maybe they have to get things cleaned up more than regular athletes. But this has been a thing with Stolarz, right? Not necessarily loose bodies, not necessarily injuries such as this one, but there have been injuries that have kind of gotten in the way of progression before with him. And I think it was one of the concerns and probably something that existed in the back of the minds of many Leafs fans who couldn't help but get excited about the goaltending situation in Toronto because it has been so good since Stolarz teamed up with Joseph Woll to form, you know, a competitive environment, but also the best tandem in the NHL to this point.
Yeah, here's my positive spin because I like to do that. It's going to give Joseph Woll the perfect opportunity to claim the number one starting spot as the important hockey is around the corner. So let's say it's 6 weeks, 4 to 6 weeks. Woll is going to get a unchallenged run at being the number one goalie for the Leafs. They're going to need to pick someone to be game one starter when the playoffs come around. It's been nice to see them kind of jockeying back and forth, like a couple good games of Stolarz, a couple great games from Woll. Hey, maybe this is, I almost said blessing in disguise. I don't believe that, so I'm not even going to pretend. It might be just a great opportunity for Woll to say, all right, I'm going to be given the harder workload here. I might be given the share of the workload, depending on where Hildeby's at, to just play the best hockey I can and be focused on that and not about who's going to get what start. It's going to be you. You're going to be the number one guy. So maybe we learn about Joseph Woll. Maybe we learn that he is ready for this task to be the Leafs' number one goaltender. Or maybe we don't. And then we'll have lots more to talk about.
Yeah, I think the unfortunate thing, and again, I'm not doomcasting this, or at least I'm trying not to, but, you know, Joseph Woll has dealt with his fair share of sort of mysterious injuries as well. One prefaced the entire season for Joseph Woll and kind of gave Stolarz the runway, like I guess Woll is receiving now, to take some of that crease away from the opposite guy. So, again, I don't think you can feel comfortable if you're a Maple
Definitely
Leafs fan
not.
Right now because this isn't a great situation. But, again, a lot of stock has been, you know, put into Joseph Woll's development. They've already made an investment in him before he even proved himself at that level. Like, everyone believes in Joseph Woll. The only thing getting in his way, which could be the same as Stolarz, is the injury bug, and that continues to rear its ugly head. The thing that is interesting with me, or for me, is does this change the way the Maple Leafs play? Because everything has been built upon this one thing where, yeah, you got great goaltending every single night, and you can play kind of like the Boston Bruins played a lot last year, which is we know we're going to have great goaltending, so we're going to shelter our goaltenders in a way, but also play the brand of hockey that necessitates quality goaltending because the margins are going to be thin. We're going to play low event games. We're going to make sure that we're doing our best to protect the goalie, but ultimately the goalie is going to have to make some saves. I wonder if they have to open it up a bit. You talk about having to win games in multiple ways. If you're going to be a great team, you got to win close games, high scoring games, games in which you don't actually deserve to win. You got to win those too. I wonder if they try to find other ways to win now that the goaltending situation is a little bit more unconvincing.
It's definitely going to test their depth, which we have talked about being one of the maybe the the positives about the Maple Leafs having a little bit of a stock of goaltenders. We might see a couple in the next 4 to 6 weeks. Our text line's open at 590-590. Shoot us a message there. Standard message and data rates do apply. Before we get back into a little bit more hockey talk for the rest of the afternoon, evening, Blue Jays looking on kind of like the bridesmaid again. Just before we came on the air, it looks like the Yankees are signing or trading for Cody Bellinger. And so that's somebody the Blue Jays have been circled with many years in a row. Like, yeah, Bellinger. Doesn't look like it's going to happen. So the Yankees, they're taking no time off after missing out on Juan Soto being a part of their future. They seem to be having a pretty great offseason.
Yeah, the Yankees are proving that you don't have to pack up and go home, take your ball home with you when you lose out on a big free agent. And this one, Juan Soto was their free agent, so maybe it stings a little bit more. But there's still moves you can make to make sure it's a successful offseason. And after losing out on Juan Soto, the Yankees are having the plan B that only Blue Jays fans could ever dream of, because they went out and signed Max Fried, so they improved their starting rotation. They went out and traded and paid a low cost for Devin Williams, so now they have an all-star closer to add to the bullpen. So fixed a definite issue last year and also bolstered their rotation. Then today, as you mentioned, trading basically nothing for Cody Bellinger and getting a bat they can plug right into the position Juan Soto was in, and it's not going to match the production of Soto, but it's going to eat up some of it, and it's going to allow Aaron Judge to still be protected in that lineup and be Aaron Judge, who, by the way, outperformed Juan Soto from moment wire to wire all of last season, with the exception of the playoffs. So they went out and did what was necessary after losing Juan Soto, and they've taken back some of the power in the American League East. The Boston Red Sox, there's a lot of people who are bullish on them. They haven't had the offseason that the Yankees have had, so maybe things will stay as they have been in the American League East, with the Yankees bouncing back after losing Juan Soto.
Yeah, and Bob Nightingale and others saying that the Yankees are also interested in talks with Pete Alonso, Christian Walker, Carlos Santana, and Paul Goldschmidt. So they're not messing around.
So essentially spending the money that they had reserved for Juan Soto and just making their team, dare I say, better than it was with Juan Soto.
Yeah. Yeah, the AL East.
I personally love an offseason like that.
I know. I'm looking at this line of action and not standing and waiting. And, you know, I don't think the Blue Jays are done, whatever their offseason plans are. But the market starts to get a little less, you know, the pickings are slimmer. How about that? I don't know. You can also send us that at 590-590. Would you have wanted to get a Cody Bellinger on your Blue Jays team as we look ahead? We're going to go into that a little bit more. Also, we have a little bit of news on the NBA All-Star game format changing for the 2025 season. We'll get into that, too. There was an MLB 62-page study on the rise of pitcher injuries that was posted today. Basically, yeah, velocity and all this crazy workload is actually ruining pitchers' arms. Did you know? Yes, we knew, and it's happening.
I didn't need 62 pages.
You didn't? Well, you could read it if you'd like. MLB posted this study on the rise of pitcher injuries today. We'll go into that and more. And we also have some best bets for you tonight. We're going to get Devin Dubnyk in a few minutes. But we're going to talk about some of these games today. We got Boston and Calgary at 9 o'clock on Sportsnet 1, and the Kings in Pittsburgh at 7 o'clock. But we have a lot of games on Sportsnet Plus as well. One of them for me is again, we saw just the other day, was Buffalo in action against Montreal tonight. I got that one, and that's on Sportsnet Plus. I got that one circled because I think if Buffalo loses to Montreal tonight, that could be the end of, I mean, it's they're already on a 10-game losing streak. But if you lose to Montreal, the one team below you, like what happens in Buffalo? It's been a very interesting week for them.
Yeah, I got a message today. Sabres winning tonight, right? Like, have to win. And I'm like, why? Like, I don't understand.
Do you think they have that, like, fight in them?
Okay, so they get Terry Pegula, the owner of the team, comes and says, no, nothing's changed. We believe in you guys. Like, what is that going to change? Because I think the problem with Buffalo is that no one believes in each other, right?
They're looking around. Terry tells you he believes in you.
No, like what would that? Fired what up would after that do? That just means, oh, you don't want to spend money to actually fix what's wrong with us. Like I'm looking at that. If I'm on that team, if I'm playing a bit role on that team, and I'm seeing what actually afflicts this group with a coach who is, and again, Lindy Ruff is stepping in front of it and saying, you know, this is on me because he's trying to protect his guys. But part of it is him not knowing at all what to do to fix this thing. Players have to be feeling the exact same way. Kevin Adams is probably feeling the exact same way. Maybe a bit of a relief for him that because he doesn't have to go out, run out and make a panic move. So at least he's not going to have another potential Jack Eichel or Sam Reinhart on his record, given where they have done what they've done since leaving the Buffalo Sabres. But yeah, I don't think I'm feeling any better about the Sabres because they got a vote of confidence from the guy who probably doesn't want to invest more money in the team, given what they've had in a return on investment.
We'll have to wait for my motivation station bets later in the evening
we'll
see how
on.
I'm feeling about the Buffalo Sabres in action tonight. But let's bring in our first guest of the evening, Devin Dubnyk, NHL Network and former NHL goaltender. Devin, thanks so much for jumping on. How are you tonight?
Good, thanks. I had to step off the ice from practice to get on here, but that's okay. I'm just the goalie coach.
I was going to ask you, any of those kids like on the pipeline of the NHL, we need some goaltenders, maybe Canadian goaltenders most specifically. Anyone you got a future scouting report on, like maybe 2045 NHL entry draft?
Yeah, I can't even do the math on the date. He just turned 11 in the summer, so he is my oldest, and this is his first year playing goalie, so it's definitely a different beast trying to watch a hockey game when your kid's a goalie.
Oh, I can't imagine.
I bet.
Been fun. He's kind of always been the emergency backup other years, and he finally convinced me to let him play, and he's been good.
The last name is Dubnyk, so it makes a lot of sense. Do you have a theory on the state of Canadian goaltending? I mean, you were a World Junior guy in 06, because you've been a Hockey Canada guy before. Like, why aren't we producing elite level guys north of the border?
I think it's a combination. I mean, I think it's one of those things that Hockey Canada certainly needs to look at the program and make sure that it's running the way it should be ran. Compared to you got to go do your research and see what these other countries are doing. In saying that, I think it's also other countries essentially catching up. I mean, we were spoiled with Vezina candidates and Hart Trophy winners over and over. We had four or five of them on the roster or vying for a spot, and that's just, I mean, that was what, 20 years of that?
Yep.
16, 20 years of that we just expected that. And, you know, it's unfortunate for these guys. You got two Stanley Cup winners on the roster and everybody's talking about what's happening to Canadian goaltending. But I think a lot of it is you look at how many top goalies are coming from other places. I mean, the U.S. has got four or five guys that are unbelievable. And so, and especially looking at the names on paper, look amazing. That didn't used to be the case. U.S. didn't have four or five guys like that. That, you know, those are starting jobs in the NHL. And same with Russia. I mean, Russia's got four ridiculously good starters that they can look at. And Finland and Sweden and these countries. I realize Russia's not in the tournament, but you know, all of these countries now they're kind of catching up on that curve. And I think that's why you're seeing less Canadian goalies in there. Whereas before it was definitely the majority, but you got to make sure that you're doing the right things to keep up and get a step ahead.
It's a fascinating position because nothing really is promised. And I think you went through that in your career. I mean, you had your ups and downs, but you certainly had an amazing season in 2014-15 with the Minnesota Wild. It was right place, right time. And it felt that way this season for Anthony Stolarz, but he gets his moment here, interrupted by injury, missing the next 4 to 6 weeks after having basically getting his knee cleaned up a little bit. I'm fascinated by this because he gets his chance, and I feel like in the back of mind, especially when you're nearing 30 years old, you've been in the league for a little while, and you finally get your moment. In the back of the mind, are you thinking about injury? Can you be an NHL goaltender, at least one that doesn't have a career that's promised to them nowadays, without suffering from some sort of injury anxiety?
I don't think it's something that guys think about. You can't really go out and play and think about it. I mean, if he's getting his knee cleaned up, it's probably something that's been bothering him for a while and maybe just got to the point that it was affecting. He wasn't able to perform. Obviously, he was performing, but something could have happened that tweaked it or it just needed to be done. And now's a good time to have it done. You know, it's going to give Wool a good opportunity. And he's played extremely well this year also. And then they'll get a look at their younger guy as well there. But it's disappointing. I don't think it's something that he'd be thinking about while playing. You know, you enjoy those times. And kind of when you get rolling like that, you're just in the moment. And, you know, for a guy like him who's spent a lot of time as a backup and a very good backup, you know, this is a situation where he could have been capable a few years ago of doing something like this. And that's why it's so hard to become a starting goalie in the NHL is maybe the opportunity just doesn't come. And maybe you're not ready for it when it comes. And you know, he got this opportunity this year and he's ran with it. So I think more than anything, he's just got to be able to curb the disappointment of being sidelined when he's playing the best hockey of his career in the spotlight in Toronto, and just make sure it doesn't affect him when he comes back. And obviously the net's going to be his when he comes back. And so you just got to make sure he gets back in that mindset of this is my net and I'm going to go with it and not think too much about the injury or the time he's missed. And, you know, these are all the challenges you deal with sport, but especially with goaltending.
Yeah, is the net going to be his when it comes back? Like, is there an opportunity here for Joseph Woll to have 4 to 6 weeks of runtime to play the heavier workload, to play the bigger opponents, to be the number one guy, and to maybe, like, earn and really solidify that he is that guy? Or does his own injury concern and does his own, I guess, past in the sense of having injury questions make this still a 1A, 1B winner-takes-all situation headed towards the playoffs for the Maple Leafs?
Well, I think it's absolutely an opportunity for him. If he counts on this, and I mean, he's their guy right now. They're not, he's 1A and 1B right now. And that's not saying anything, but nobody's third stringer is coming in and going to be a 1A, 1B situation. This is a fantastic opportunity for him. And Toronto obviously has more invested in him through time and whatnot. So they want him to succeed as well, and he's an extremely good goaltender. So I think this is a great opportunity. If he grabs this and goes out there and takes Toronto on a run, when I said that Stolarz is going to have the net back, if that's the case, I think it's going to be back to a 1A, 1A situation, and they want to see who's ready to go. They're going to play the hot hand come playoff time, and that's not a bad situation to have whatsoever. One injury-wise, if you get close to the playoffs or in the playoffs, you now have another option that can help you compete for a Stanley Cup. And two, if a guy slips up, maybe he needs a break. You look at Edmonton getting there last year with giving Skinner a breather with Pickard coming in. And he won one game, and then Skinner kind of took off from there. So all these situations, it is so good to have two good goalies. But I think if Woll comes in and stands on his head and sees this opportunity, certainly makes things very interesting when Stolarz comes back, but in a good way for Toronto fans.
We're on the line with former NHL goaltender Devan Dubnyk. An interesting goaltending matchup on Sportsnet 1 tonight. Boston visiting the Calgary Flames. It'll be Swayman versus Dustin Wolf, two of the good young goaltenders in the game. But for Swayman this year, it's been a struggle. Why has it been so much of an issue here this season for Jeremy Swayman? Obviously, there's been a lot of noise in Boston, and we know he was late to camp and getting the contract signed and everything, but an .888 save percentage for a guy who's top three and going to the Four Nations face-off with the Team USA, it's not befitting of his talent.
No, it's not, and I think you said that right. Jeremy Swayman's talent level is through the roof, so it's going to come eventually for Boston, hopefully sooner rather than later, but it's going to come. And it doesn't happen all the time, but there are different pressures that you deal with throughout your career. I'll use the example of me signing my 6-year deal with Minnesota when I came in 2014-15, and I went on this run. I was playing with house money. I was a backup goalie before. I started 37 games in a row. Everything was a bonus. And, nobody expected anything of me when I got there. So it was, there essentially wasn't pressure there. I mean, there was when we get down the road and we're scratching and clawing for a playoff spot, but it was all bonus time. And then I go and sign a 6-year deal and as for starting goaltender money, and now it's expected. And it's two different things. It's two different pressures. Even though you can't see it, it's different pressure. It's same thing with Swayman. He had Allmark there, and they were good buddies and a great tandem. And now Allmark's gone, and now he's got the big ticket. There are different pressures there. Now it is expected of you to be the guy. And sometimes that's difficult to deal with. And you tack on the public awareness of him not being at camp to start. And then everybody's going to have eyes laser focused on if he's ready to start the season and all that kind of stuff. It's a new pressure for him, and it's something that he's going to have to deal with, and he will deal with, and he's got 8 years to deal with it, but I know he'll get out of it before that. But it is, there's different mental pressures that come with being the guy and not just being an amazing 1A, 1B guy where you got your safety valve on the bench if you don't feel great. And so he's going to have to learn what it's like to be the guy. And again, with his talent, there's no question he's going to get there. It's just when.
Yeah, how about being the guy if you're Dustin Wolf, having kind of a breakthrough season in a sense, being able to be relied upon by the Calgary Flames so heavily in the run for the Calder? Like, what have you seen in his short stint in the NHL, and is it something sustainable that Flames fans can be like, all right, we have our guy, we can settle on him being maybe a part of this franchise moving forward as like a cornerstone piece in net?
Yeah, it's great, and that's that opportunity thing, you know, and you look when Markstrom's there and he's the guy, and then they have this top prospect in Wolf, it's like where does he come in? Where does he get those opportunities? Is he able to grab them in the few games that they get him? Because they obviously want him developing and not sitting on the bench. Now Markstrom moves and he gets an opportunity, which I don't necessarily think they handed him anything in camp. I think it was probably a competition between him and Vladar. And he's taken it and run with it. And that's exciting. It's kind of the perfect way to get a young goalie to grab that starting job without having to go into the season and kind of be rolling the dice on an unproven goaltender as your starter. He kind of earned it and seized the opportunity. And I see a little UC Saros in him, you know, with how small he is. Mm-hmm. But the way he kind of floats out there, the way he uses his edges and the way he moves around the crease is just effortless. And, I think like UC Saros plays big, but he's small. And I think Dustin Wolf is the same way. He covers area and covers the net moving around, and it just looks so effortless. The way these guys learn to use their edges now, I think Carey Price was ahead of his time the way he floated around the crease, but you got guys like Saros and Wolf now that just, and you know, Shesterkin, and the way these guys learn to skate now, it looks like they're floating out there. Wolf's one of those guys.
We only have 30 seconds, Devin, but I want to ask you about getting hit on the side of the head as a goaltender.
Oh.
And the puck goes in the net, as we saw last mm-hmm. night from Sam Reinhardt. Is that like the worst thing that happens in a goaltender's life, getting hit in the side of the head with a shot and just having it drop into the net?
Yeah, it's not good. I didn't have that too often being 6'6", and I didn't really sit in the reverse V8, but I've certainly had them go off my head, and I had them go off the back of my head and in. But those sting, and they hurt the ears too. Your ears are usually ringing, so it's a little bit of salt in the wound when those happen.
Oh, we appreciate you jumping on, Devin. Best of luck to the young one taking over the future of the Dubnyk goaltending career. We're looking forward to seeing that draft pedigree down the road. And we'll definitely chat with you soon. Thanks so much for your time tonight.
Awesome. Yeah, thanks, guys.
This is Devin Dubnyk, former NHL goalie and of NHL Network. Ahead of a busy night in the NHL, we've got Boston, Calgary. At 9 p.m., we're just teeing that one up. Good goaltending match. That's a Sportsnet 1 game at the Kings in Pittsburgh at 7 across the network. And then, like, every game you want on Sportsnet Plus, and including that Buffalo-Montreal game, which we talked about, is going to be a tough one mm-hmm. for the Sabres, maybe. But a necessary one.
We'll see. We'll see. I hate those goals, by the way.
RVH?
Like, there's no way to outlaw them. But I do think it, like, I don't know.
All the roar today on Twitter about the RVH and how it's ruining goaltending.
It's ruining goaltending. Okay, so I guess I'm not the only one. I just feel like, yeah, it's just not. It goes against the spirit of it to a certain extent.
What, hitting?
Because you don't want to get hit in the head, so you move, and when you move, it goes into the back of the net.
Just because you can't raise the puck doesn't mean it should be outlawed.
Kind of should be like beer league when it just hits the helmet and it's.
And then everyone's like, whoa.
No, play stops if you hit the goaltender in the mask.
Yeah, we'll work on you getting the puck up there around 6'6". Devin Dubnyk's ears.
Yeah, I guess that was a bad question. He never got hit in the
head. I didn't think about that, but that's too bad. Okay, we'll take a quick break. On the other side, we'll chat with Kristen Shilton, NHL reporter at ESPN, get a little deeper into some Leafs, and then we'll wrap up for the night. We'll be right back on the Fan Pregame.
Hey, it's Ben Ennis.
And I'm Brent Gunning.
We got you covered on all things Leafs, Raptors, and Blue Jays every weekday morning, 6 to 9.
It's the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Fan pregame on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Later on, we got a lot of NHL action for you across the network and on Sportsnet Plus. We talked a little bit about baseball earlier on in the segment about the Yankees loading up, but we want to talk a little bit about the NBA changing their All-Star Game format. First of all, the NBA All-Star Game is just, it's been a hard watch, you know?
Okay, yeah. Why is that?
Because the effort level is slim to none.
Okay.
And that's the thing about, and not even just NBA, I think NHL struggles with that too. They've tried to be innovative with some new things. So the NBA has revamped the format for the 2025 All-Star Game. It's going to be a four-team tournament, three teams of eight NBA All-Stars, and the fourth team of rising stars. Each game is first to 40 points. The total prize pool is $1.8 million, and the winning team...
They love just throwing cash.
They have lots of money. The winning team will get $125,000 each, and the all-star rosters of these teams will be drafted by the honorary GMs Shaq, Charles Barkley, and Kenny Smith.
Okay.
First blush.
So $125,000 each for like only the top percentile of NBA players, the all-stars who
probably don't
are all eligible because they made an all-star team.
Unless the rising stars guys win
that's the thing
I'm interested in.
That's the one thing I like here.
Yeah,
I mean the NBA's all-star game, you're right. I mean I don't think there's any fixing it, and that's okay.
Well,
whatever, it's for sponsors and some people like it. Kids, people get together. I'm sure it's fun when you're in the market. It's just never going to be a smashing success. It's on the path towards the Pro Bowl, which of course is mostly a waste of time other than for sponsorships. But the Rising Stars thing is interesting because this is one thing I think the NHL should be incorporating.
Yes.
And even if not necessarily to have like a team that goes up against the other teams in 3-on-3, but just like let's give a little shine to the next wave of players coming up so that, yeah, people can get excited about them. Like, I haven't watched that much Macklin Celebrini. I wish I carved out more time to watch Macklin Celebrini, but I'd love to see Macklin Celebrini on the NHL All-Star stage. Again, there isn't one this year. But like just mixing and mingling, getting to know some other players. Maybe you have a moment with Sidney Crosby. Maybe he's on a line with Connor McDavid for whatever reason in a 3-on-3. I think it would be cool to just incorporate young guys because you're trying to, again, push a product, which is the NHL or the NBA, and it helps when you're able to showcase more than just the guys that go over here, like Clayton Keller from Utah. You set your watch to it once a year, except for this year. So I think it's a good idea for the NBA to do this because it is a very small group. You said it only three teams of eight, 24 All-Stars. It's not that much, and not every team has one, but if you add eight of the rising stars of the game to play, I think there'll be more fan bases intrigued and more reason to actually have some interest in what you're going to see.
Yeah, I love the idea that they're going to include Charles Barkley and Shaq and Kenny Smith because they're must-see. You know, those guys are hilarious. They'll make this interesting. They'll make it fun. And maybe their presence will make the guys, you know, take it a little bit more seriously.
I can see the Rising Stars like going pretty hard.
And the best thing and the Rising Stars team will actually be coached by Candace Parker. So like that's an interesting wrinkle in it all, or the GM of it, I guess. They've got it all ironed out. So I think the Rising Stars part is definitely something to lean into because those guys, A, want to win some money, B, want to win some bragging rights, maybe some sponsorship opportunities, some TV time. Like,
I guess what constitutes a Rising Star, though?
That's a good question.
LaMelo Ball level, or are we talking about the young guys like Stephon Castle or whoever you want to pick from a rookie class?
I wonder how they'll determine that.
It will be interesting to see what the criteria is for the Rising Stars, because if it's just like LaMelo Ball and other guys who are at that level, then they're going to be too cool to try and probably won't make any difference.
Kevin Durant, minutes after announced, said, quote, "I hate it. I absolutely hate it. I think it will be terrible."
That's good.
I don't know if there's
top 10 players ever with a ringing endorsement.
Yeah, there you go. I just don't know how much. Maybe East versus West. I think that's just the way to do it.
That's what they do.
Yeah.
It never works.
Just for $1 million. Just put more money in.
More money.
I don't know.
It's at the point where the more money thing doesn't even do anything.
Yeah.
It does for the NBA Cup, I think, to a certain extent, because there are guys who don't make money on these rosters. Or much money on these rosters, and I think it means something. And it's real competitive games, like you actually have to get up for it. But $1.8 million prize pool for a bunch of multi-millionaires, I don't know if that's going to really move it.
We'll see. No NHL All-Star Game, as you mentioned, this year. have a whole new thing to keep an eye on. Mm-hmm. Four Nations Face-Off. All right, let's bring in Kristen Shilton, NHL reporter at ESPN. Help us go through some of the main stories of the day. Kristen, how are you tonight?
Good, thanks. How are you guys?
Oh, lots going on in Leafs land. You know, never a dull moment. So let's start with the big news of the day. Anthony Stolarz out for the next 4 to 6 weeks, removing a loose body or a pebble from his knee. We won't ask you too much about what the heck that means, but most likely just about how this is going to change the goaltending dynamic. I'm team positive here in a sense. I'm trying to be at least that. Maybe this is going to give Joseph Woll an opportunity to really solidify himself as that number one goaltender, to test some of this goalie depth that the Leafs have been boasting a little bit here. But when you read this, when you see that Anthony Stolarz and this goaltending tandem will be at least sidelined for a little bit, is there real cause for concern if you're a Leafs fan?
Well, I think I agree with you on the Woll front. I think it's a terrific opportunity for him to re-solidify himself as that number one guy. But at the same time, when you look at Woll's injury history, that's what makes this so concerning, is that, you know, he was supposed to be the Leafs' day one starter. Obviously, that wasn't the case because of the tightness that he was dealing with at the time. And just, you know, you're aware of his history and the way that he has struggled to stay healthy for long stretches, and it's just, you're really one tweak to Woll away from this being, you know, a bigger sort of disaster than it is at the moment. I mean, if Woll stays healthy, I don't think that the Leafs are going to have too much of a dip in terms of the level of goaltending that they've been getting, and it has been excellent, not just from Stolarz, but from Woll as well. He's played extremely well this entire season when he's been in, and that's, you know, I think it's a testament to him and the work that he's put in, but it's also the fact that neither goaltender has been really taxed, is that they have been able to really share the workload for the most part. So I don't know. There's some concern, obviously. There always is going to be, especially, is it 4 weeks or is it six? Because 2 weeks, a lot can happen for a team in that stretch as well. So you want Stolarz back as soon as possible, but you want him also, you know, at his best come March, April, as opposed to, you know, now in December. So if this is something that, you know, this little pebble, whatever that is, I've truly never heard of anything like that. But if they need to do the surgery now, get it cleaned up, and then he's going to be, you know, able to play at his best when it matters the most for this team, then obviously this was the right call for them to do it now, and we'll see what Woll is able to put together over the next couple weeks.
Kristen, you wrote recently at ESPN.com about the changes to Craig Berube's Leafs, the changes to the Leafs since Craig Berube took over. I wonder, like, the sudden presence of elite goaltending every night, how do you think that's changed the Leafs? It just feels like, yeah, Berube is obviously implementing what he does, but the Leafs playing this low event style and relying on this elite goaltending every night, I think even subconsciously that has helped shape what the Leafs have been and what they are now under Craig Berube. I'm not saying it's going to be compromised now necessarily, because I do believe Joseph Woll is going to continue with that. But I feel like the goaltending has been almost as influential potentially as the coaching.
I 100% agree with you. And it's why in that piece, I included what Sheldon Keefe said, you know, after the Devils lost to the Leafs, and he's just, you know, saying like best goaltending in the league on the other side, and just the way he said it, almost like, yeah, that's nice, because that hasn't always been anywhere close to the case for the Leafs. They of course had, you know, several changes and who's going to be their starter, and you know, you cycled through a lot of guys with Jack Campbell, and Matt Murray was supposed to be the guy, and you know, you've been kind of waiting on Woll, and then Samsonov having the down year that he did, and there's just been such a roller coaster, I think, for the team, and it is a mental thing, like goaltending, knowing that you have that guy back there who is going to make the save, knowing that you don't have to be a hero if you're a forward, knowing that every night doesn't have to be a 6-5 decision. All of those things really do create a mindset and a mentality. And I've seen it in, I think, a lot of teams who have gone a long way in post-seasons, especially because they know that those players are going to turn up in a big way in the big moments. But I also think for the Leafs, that confidence stems not just from the elite level of goaltending they've gotten, but also the fact that their defensive style is different. And that there really is, I think, a more collective buy-in on that side of the puck, but also just that I think the Tanev and Jake McCabe of it all have just really given them a reason to be confident in the whole defensive process now, whereas in the past that's been a real problem. So I think it's a tandem of just much better goaltending and a better overall defensive process that the team has undertaken here with Berube, because you always knew they could score goals and they're always going to be able to score goals with the talent that they have on the ice. But now that you have these different elements that have really been able to shine, that has given, I think, the Leafs a different confidence. And that's, you know, I said, this is how the Leafs are different. I guess we're going to really see now if they're different, because if the defense stays where it's at, even if the goaltending isn't, you know, exactly the same for the next little bit, they're not going to suffer too much.
How important do you think it is for the Leafs to take advantage of what seems to be a weaker Atlantic or weaker Eastern Conference this year? And watch, that'll come back to bite me. But it just doesn't feel like there's so many elite teams. And in the past, like, they've run into the same playoff opponents. They've run into the same competition, which has just felt a step ahead. But this year, you know, you look around and it feels like the Leafs could really be one of those teams to advance past the first round, through the second, maybe to all the way to a cup final. Could you believe it? But, you know, this stretch of time where they're going to have no Anthony Stolarz, 4 to 6 weeks, you know, they're going back and forth with the Florida Panthers for top spot, like holding on to that and giving themselves the best opportunity to make a lengthy playoff run. Is this the year with the state of the Eastern Conference that the Leafs should continue to capitalize on maybe being the number one seed?
Well, I mean, just looking at the Atlantic to start, I mean, it really feels like a different division than a year ago where, you know, I think every team had at least 75 points. They were the only division in the league that had, you know, that much parity. And then now you look and we don't really talk about Tampa. We don't really talk about Boston, you know, being those top tier teams and being teams that you expect are going to, you know, really be pushing Florida and Toronto. And that just hasn't been the case. It's been just, whether it's the inconsistency, whether it's just that teams are getting older and you're kind of seeing that start to, you know, to rear its ugly head. I mean, you know, you think with, you know, TV shows, they always say don't go one season too long, you know, cut it off before, you know, people stop laughing with you, but laughing at you. And it's sort of in hockey, it's like you try to run it back and run it back and run it back. And sometimes you run out of runway. And maybe we're seeing that a little bit, but I can completely come back to eat my words too. You never know with how things will go, but it feels like that a bit around the entire Eastern Conference, where just a lot of teams, you know, you look at Carolina and their blue line, you know, there were questions about that. There was questions about their goaltending. Just some of these bigger clubs that we expected to be good and maybe haven't been as consistent. But it's also cyclical, right? Because look at what Washington's doing. Look at what, you know, some of these younger teams have been doing. We expected probably that the Rangers would be a lot further along, but it's the Devils that are, you know, really pushing again in the Metro. So when I look at the East, I just see sort of a changing of the guard, maybe a little bit more in some of these areas of just teams that are pushing that we didn't expect to be as good as they are. And then ones that have maybe just started to fall off a bit quicker than expected. So if the Leafs want to take advantage of that, absolutely. This is your moment, because it's generally the Eastern Conference that we're talking about, like, oh, there's so many teams and who's going to be the last one in. And now, you know, it feels like a competition in a different way, where, you know, some of these teams are really pulling away earlier than maybe we've seen. And if the Leafs want to be one of them, you would expect that even with Stolarz out, there's still an opportunity to put some space between them themselves and some of these other clubs. And especially knowing you've got, you know, no All-Star game this year, you've got Four Nations, that's going to be a different stretch of time off. Even then, you'll be taking advantage of rest. So I think for Toronto, yes, you want to take advantage, but also, you know, don't get too cocky either, because, you know, that can be just as that can come back to haunt you just as much too.
We are on the line with Kristen Shilton of ESPN. About 6 months ago, Kristen, we were dissecting the body language of a photo of Mitch Marner and Craig Berube having coffee. Now, 6 months later or so, I can pretty confidently say that he's been the team's MVP so far this year. Why do you think Marner has flourished under Craig Berube?
Well, I think for Marner, it's contract year. I don't think that you can deny the fact that any player is going to want to show their best. They're going to want to, obviously make this season especially a good one individually because of everything that's at stake. And I think that that's, first and foremost, something that you just, you can't ignore. But I think with the Berube system especially, it's a no-nonsense thing. I think when Marner has been at his best, it's like, yes, he's creative, and yes, there's so much that goes into his game with the playmaking and the way that he can move the puck. But it just feels like Berube is just so straightforward in what he wants, and that just works for Marner. Is that it's when you've talked about coaches in the past, and we don't have necessarily bring up the Babcock situation, but nobody's trying to get in his head. Nobody's trying to throw Mitch Marner off. It's really just, Matthews has been out. There's been injuries that the team has had to deal with, but throughout it all, Marner obviously has, you want to talk about taking advantage of opportunity. That's what he's done. Is he's just said, hey, you know what, if Matthews has to, take a step back because of an injury, you look at Tavares as well, stepping up at times. It's just these guys who maybe have felt a little bit like in the past they've been overshadowed. Now they've taken the spotlight, and that's a good feeling. I think it's a good feeling, especially when you have a coach who comes in with a fresh voice. And Berube just wants these guys to be who they are. He's not asking them to reinvent the wheel. He's not going to be bringing them into meetings every other day saying, well, let's try this, let's do that. It's very much just, okay, what do you do well? Go do that. And, if we have to adjust, we have to adjust. But I think when Marner has been the Marner that we see him being this year, it's just when no one's tried to change him or make him alter his style or his game or anything else, it's just go be you. And that's a big thing for Marner, and I think it's something he embraces. He embraces that challenge of being the number one guy, and it couldn't come at a better time for him individually, knowing what's at stake. So whether it's Berube exactly or whether it's just, Marner understanding the situation personally and professionally, this might be the best that we've ever seen from him, just in terms of all of the roles that he plays. I mean, how often do you see top line scorer as well as penalty killer, as well as guy on the top line, as well as guy on the power play? He plays so much in so many ways for them, and really is able to deliver. And there's just not a lot of guys in the league, I think, that could wear that many minutes as well as he does. So it's a testament just to, I think, how hungry he is and recognizing your opportunity.
I'm talking to Kristen Shilton of ESPN. So trade deadline is until March, but there's actually been a little bit of a flurry of at least movement or discussion about movement. So you look at this Maple Leafs team, and of course there are definitely some areas to improve upon. Like, what's number one on the wish list if you're looking at the Leafs, if this is going to be a different team come playoff success, or a team that you think might have some something to trade with those Maple Leafs?
Well, I think if you're looking at your depth scoring, that's probably an area you'd like to address if you could. And then I think defensively, you want to add there as well. I think those two areas stick out, and it's probably for a lot of teams that hope to be a contender in the spring want both of those things and would be eyeing them. I think in the secondary scoring area, we knew going into the season, I remember writing this about the Leafs, was just that their center depth was going to be an issue. And it hasn't really hurt them too badly to this point, but at the same time, you talk about how good, Tavares has been. I don't know if we were necessarily expecting that. You've seen the level of scoring they've gotten, from Knies and from Marner and Nylander, of course. But you look at the rest of the team collectively, and you're just not getting as much. You're not getting as many goals from your defense as maybe you might like. And you're not finding a balance necessarily as much in your scoring. So I think a trade deadline, you'd want to bring in guys who could maybe just, ease some of that concern that if, you know, one of these sort of top six guys who are putting pucks in the net, if one of them goes cold, you're not completely scrambling to find, you know, more scoring. So I think that would be number one. And then defensively, outside of your top four, I mean, you've been shuffling guys in and out and kind of trying to figure that out. So I would think that they would also like to add, you know, maybe another veteran piece there, just for peace of mind more than anything, just to make sure that you have, you know, just really that you're not scrambling, you know, in March and April to find pairings that you like or to get guys going, that you feel confident in what you have. Because like I said, it has been a different thing for the Leafs this year to have defensive confidence, and they really have been able to roll out some solid pairings, and you'd like to see that be able to continue well into the spring if that's what your goal is, and you would think that it is for Toronto.
Yeah, hopefully they don't need to add another goaltender to that. So 4 to 6 weeks, we'll find out about Anthony Stolarz' health. Appreciate your time tonight, Kristen. This was great. We'll definitely chat soon. And if not, enjoy the holidays in the meantime.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks so much. That's Kristen Shilton, NHL reporter at ESPN, looking through some of the main storylines of the day with the Maple Leafs. I want to pivot back on one main storyline of the day. With the Blue Jays, because we talked about it, Cody Bellinger to the Yankees a little earlier in the lead of our show, John Heyman tweeting out the following, quote, Blue Jays were also interested in Bellinger. That helped the Cubs do the deal they wanted, sending just $5 million to the Yankees, offset $52.5 million that was owed to Bellinger over the next 2 years. So Blue Jays helping other teams get better.
Yeah, these are tough, honestly.
I hate when I see that.
With every single big transaction in Major League Baseball this offseason, it feels like there's a subsequent tweet that involves the Blue Jays that just rubs the salt directly into the wound.
Yep,
it's as difficult as it was last winter and the winter before that.
All right, we got a little more time to redeem ourselves here. Okay, so Motivation Station tonight, I'm back on it. One of them I feel much more confident in than the others, but let's go with the Rangers. Plus 122 tonight against the Nashville Predators.
Oh, man.
What?
What's happened to the Rays? Plus 122?
Plus 122
against the worst
against,
team in hockey?
Yeah, so I think, come on. I mean, this team in a world of hurt. They need a win, just like their other New York team in the Sabres, and they've got the better goaltender. They got Shesterkin in net tonight. I just think for plus 122... got to hope there's some motivation in New York. And I'm going to also throw a bonus one. Capocacco is taking shots, throwing shots. He's getting healthy scratched, and he's taking it to heart. Plus 470 to get on the scoreboard tonight. He's got some motivation, I'll tell you that. And then my final one is the Sabres.
Oh, you're on the Sabres?
No.
No?
But they need him win.
It's on the television.
Well, it was also -120 against the Montreal Canadiens tonight. That's a big difference. I don't like this one as much, but that's your motivation station, all right?
I think you have a lottery read, so I'm going to be quick. Because it's the Cup, Oklahoma City Thunder, I got it -5. I think money has been on the Thunder since. It's gone up to about 6.5. Thunder are winning this NBA Cup, and they're going to do so convincingly, or at least with free throws, by the end of the night.
Are you sad that the Cup's ending?
I am. It was awesome. But we're going to roll into the NFL playoffs and all be right.
Always be next year for you, Justin.
Always something to invest my time and energy into.
And money. All right, speaking of money, we're almost at the end of the 50-50 fortune here. Sportsnet 590 Fan supporting food for kids. And we're in the home stretch, so we want to help you raise as much as we can while making a huge difference. The current take-home prize for our 50-50 lottery, where you can help feed kids in the GTA, is over $850,000. So someone's going to win that jackpot on Thursday, this Thursday, in 2 days. So get this number as high as possible. To find more details and to buy your ticket, go to foodforkids5050.ca or text the word cash to 59590. We'll send the link right to your phone. 50-50 fortune supporting Food for Kids. Standard message and data rates apply. Ontario only. 2 more days.
Forget the Cup. I'm more sad that this is ending.
I know.
Only 2 more days of this read and this excitement.
Let's
almost at $1 million.
Let's get it to $1 million. All right, everyone. Have a great night tonight, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Thunder up.